You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
This Father's Day at Lowe's, score free gifts for the greatest dad. Right now, get a free Blackstone 8-piece accessory kit when you buy a Blackstone 28-inch griddle. Plus, get two free select Craftsman V20 tools when you buy an RP brushless drill and impact driver combo kit. Shop these deals and more this Father's Day at Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid through 6/15 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Hey there. Thank you for joining us for this episode of 13. Before we get started, as always, we want to thank our new patrons. Melanie Oxhorn, Ozymandias Anarchy, Ernie Lozano, Fahd Abubsi, Teresa Robinson, Jessica Hoffman, Rebecca Rose Mersinger, and Jennifer Tate. Thank you so much for your support, and welcome to the Pod Fam. Today's story is a double feature. These stories were previously released on our Patreon. We have over 4 years of bonus stories available exclusively for our patrons. So if you want to hear more stories like these, head on over to patreon.com/13pod, and we'll have a link in the show notes. Our first story is Lorelei by Jonathan Hart. Are you ready? Sit back, turn down the lights, and now, on with the show.
Lorelei, I love you for your name alone. Your insistence on never being called Lauren and never shortening it to Lore. They say so many guys are afraid to tell girls when they love them. I'm not afraid. I love you, Lorelei. I won't let you go. Do you remember when we met at Grace's Halloween party last year? I'd seen you before at school, Lorelei, but never noticed you. Other girls were trying to dress in sexy costumes, but you, Lorelei, you tried to dress as a monster and failed because you were too beautiful. I never imagined falling in love with Frankenstein's bride before you. I can't remember how the conversation started, only that I thought we were flirting until I told you about my recent breakup, and I worried that this doomed us. No one wants to date someone who isn't over their ex. But you just laughed. Let it go, you whispered, in a way that inspired me to take hold of something else. We sat on the balcony at the edge of Grace's backyard, our legs dangling through the fence and out over the canyon. I clung to a fence post and luxuriated in the falling death a few feet away. My voice shot into the void, escaping the roars of drunken teenagers behind us.
It's hard. When you think you're meant to be with someone, when they promise they'll never let you go.
You snickered.
Oh God, are you really just like this? Like what?
I asked, hurt.
You're dramatic. People have told me so.
I leaned up, incredulous.
People? People who?
You brushed past it. You always did that. Answered just the questions you wanted in order to take control of the conversation.
We're in high school,
you scoffed.
People don't find soulmates here.
I put my chin between my knees.
It's okay,
you smiled.
Theater girls like dramatic guys. Sometimes.
You were a theater girl, and that spark in your eyes did me in. That slight smile. That was senior year. And I told you that I didn't know what to do next. You told me you were going to be an actress. Everyone told you that you never could, not in this life.
But there are actresses, aren't there?
Your smile at me became a grin.
People act.
I looked away to hide my fascination. We spoke of a thousand other things, art and dreams and things that mattered. Behind us, I'm sure there were hookups and bad mistakes, shouting matches and events shared on social media that would be better off private. Do you see why I can't connect to them, Lorelai? Do you see why I need you? But I was a coward. Half of us are before we're men. Boys are either bold or cowardly. No in between. So I tied letters to your locker. I left them because I didn't have your number, your email. I was too much of a coward to ask for any of those things. I only knew your locker number because I watched you. I didn't watch close enough, of course, to realize that you shared a locker. An embarrassed girl took one look at my poetry and threw it away. That was why you never read it. But I still saw you, and we talked, the way kids in some of the same classes do. Not intimately. Not until I was brave. If I could burn the moment I asked you out into my mind, I would. But for all my devotion to you, I've forgotten. Remind me of it when we speak again. I know you said yes because we dated. I was in love, and I knew you weren't. Not really. I remember your musical laughter as we sat atop the rocks and overlooked the ocean at night. Away from the bonfire, surrounded by people who called themselves our friends, I remember that magical summer after high school. Every wonderful moment that wasn't when you asked me where I was going, where I would be. You wouldn't be far, you told me. I could always follow. And with that invitation, I thought that I would marry you. That we'd be together forever. But now, you're gone. Why, Lorelai, did you never share anything? I never got your number, your address. You didn't add me on anything, and when I went as far as Googling your name, I found nothing. I asked my friends about you, but all I got were quizzical looks.
Lorelai who?
Grace asked, though she'd invited you to her party.
Lorelai,
I said.
Please, just message her. Ask her where she is. I'm sorry,
Grace said.
I don't know a Lorelai.
And I stomped away furiously. I didn't know what I'd done, but everyone was conspiring with you to stop me. Lorelai, I swear that if I didn't love you, I'd want to hurt you. To cause you pain for all the pain you've caused me. It's sick to think that you would treat someone this way when they'd give anything just to see you smile. Please, Lorelai, please.
There was a Lorelai at our school,
Tommy said. Tommy sat under the benches during football games. He emailed strange porn links to all his friends and said that he was trolling until everyone finally blocked him. He once got pulled aside by a police officer at school for something, and no one knows what it was. Now, the summer after high school, I felt a strange kinship sitting in his living room as he smoked a bowl. He was one of the only other people who didn't have any college plans in my entire social orbit. Though it'd be wrong to say that I had much of an orbit. I never did.
You knew her?
I asked.
No one talks about her.
Tommy nodded, small wisps of smoke billowing out of his nostrils. And then he frowned and shook his head.
I don't know her, he said. She didn't talk to freshmen, you know. Freshmen?
I asked.
Oh yeah, she was a senior when we were freshmen, you know. Then next year she was gone.
I shook my head.
Different Lorelei.
He shrugged.
Only Lorelei I remember. But I guess it makes sense. That Lorelei, she didn't graduate. She dropped out?
I asked.
That Lorelei, she disappeared.
And despite everything, that word flows around me with the disorienting marijuana fog. Disappeared.
How did I not hear about that?
He shrugged.
I don't know. Some schools tell every kid about stuff like that. Ours doesn't. I think maybe that's better, instead of bringing it to the attention of a lot of people who didn't even know her. And it's not like they knew what happened anyway. Maybe they were waiting to find a body to announce it. But they never did.
It was stupid. A stupid thought.
Do you know what she looked like?
I asked.
Yeah? One sec.
I sat there as he scrolled through his phone. I looked at photos of him with his family. Pictures of him catching fish. The fish themselves, framed. Lures still bright and colorful on the walls. My eyes caught on those lures. I couldn't look away.
Okay, I've got her,
he said. I turned to see his phone screen. A profile picture of a girl. Oh God, Lorelei. It was you. And beneath it were all the posts from others. Online epigraphs. Always you had seemed like that vapor. So present and visible, but impossible to grasp. And sometimes headache-inducing. Each question was met with evasion. Sometimes you would get on tangents that I could not predict or understand.
Do you ever feel stuck?
You once asked me, as we walked together at 2 a.m. through those summer streets devoid of schedules.
Sometimes,
I said, though I wanted to be. Now, the past, anywhere but the future. I could have told you that my dad worked every day until 8 p.m., that my mom got home slightly earlier, that their lives were streams of exhausting events, and when I looked ahead to that, my shivers incapacitated me. But now, with you, there was beauty and romance. We were magically aimless, no longer children, not yet adults, and free from any expectation to be either. Oh, Lorelei, to disappear into you, to have your love overwhelm and complete me and dispel every moment but now. Those hands are on me, you whispered. Sometimes.
Hands?
I asked. Still, you whispered.
I beg for freedom and I get something, but it's not that. It's the opposite, if anything.
Your eyes went hollow. At first in expression, and then they actually looked like black sockets. Strange that the dark could do that. I ignored that and focused on your words.
What are you talking about? Eric, how did we meet?
Your fingers clenched around my arm.
At a balcony at Grace's house. We did? Maybe I should take you home,
I said, not knowing where your home was.
Eric, who is Grace?
And then, wait. Lorelei, what happened after that? We were walking, you asked who Grace was. And then you had to go home. I remember. You left and you went home. Right? It's there, but in a hazy sort of way. An outline of events as opposed to the full picture. Sometimes my own memory of us on that balcony flickers like a broken bulb. Sometimes I'm sitting there alone. I didn't understand why everyone was lying to me. I texted Grace directly, and she continued to deny even knowing you, despite the fact that you were at her party. When I confronted her, she accused me of being creepy.
Remember Jason?
She'd messaged. Of course I did. He was her ex. After they broke up, he'd started calling all of her friends, anyone who knew her, trying to get a hold of her. She said the way that I was acting reminded her of that.
I'm not like that,
I told her. But she switched her tact, told me that maybe I hadn't heard from you, Lorelai, because you don't want me to know where you are. But this isn't like that. Not with you. Not between us. And besides, a few messages ago, Grace was denying that she even knew who you were. If Tommy knew you, then Grace does. If Grace invited you to her party, it's because she knew you. Grace is lying. Because I saw you there. Because you were there. And there is no confusion or worry that you weren't. I remember our conversations. They've become a part of who I am, and they are real. Because that memory wasn't the first time your eyes took on that hollow look. I remember that darkness behind them as you sat in my passenger seat. Before your head turned to look out the window, you were just a dark shape that night. I remember how, out of the corner of my eye, that shape could be formless and then gone, leaving a clear window with nothing but an orange street lamp glow behind it. But that was only my fear. My imagination, spurred on by the terror of possibly losing you. If I were to look back objectively, you were there. Because I heard your voice, and I talked to you, and I only wondered what it would be like if I was talking to an empty seat. You were always there, Lorelai. So you disappeared to everyone else, but not to me. The police never found you, but I did. You never showed me your home because you were a runaway, and I can accept that. There's something romantic about it, after all. So you're older than me. You're older than you looked. You just haven't aged at all since your senior year. We can still make a good couple. Please, tell me that anyone else saw you. Oh, God. Sienna wasn't a medium. She was the one who told me that mediums aren't real, that they are people with a vested interest in sounding real so that you'll give them your money. Instead, she was a girl who swore she'd seen ghosts and who everyone dismissed as crazy or weird. Do you see who you had me talking to, Lorelai?
This is a bad idea,
was the first thing she said. Sienna was blonde, athletic. She looked like a cheerleader. We met in the park near the end of summer, sitting on a bench, watching the children and dogs run around with each other, blissfully unaware of what their futures might hold.
Please,
I whispered,
We can just find out if she's dead. That's all I'm asking for. Eric, I've seen ghosts,
she said.
I've never looked for them. No one with any sense has. What's the worst that could happen?
She rolled her eyes.
Have you never seen a horror movie in your entire life? Yeah, sure, but has that ever happened in real life?
I asked.
If ghosts are real, they obviously can't hurt people or we'd know about it.
She bit her lip, her forehead folded.
And this is all because you talked to a girl at a party last Halloween? I didn't just talk to her, we dated.
Eric, she whispered.
What?
I asked.
Don't growl at me, just say it.
A long pause followed. I didn't think she would continue. I prepared to apologize, but she went on.
No one saw you dating anyone that entire year.
All those memories of you, Lorelai, they went fuzzy all at once. You're sitting in the car, and then you're a blur. I'm walking next to you, and then I'm alone. At some points, I'm not walking at all. My hands went to my head. If you're gone, I already don't have a future. Please, let me have a past. Please, Lorelai.
Well, how would you know?
I snapped.
Because you didn't ask anyone out. We thought you'd gotten over it. Look, Eric, I'm sorry. Sorry for what? Gotten over what?
I sputtered.
It's fine,
she sighed.
It's not. What are you talking about? Please. In junior year, you asked out every girl with a pulse. When you asked me to come here, I thought that you wanted it to be a date for a second. I was getting ready to turn you down.
I stopped her.
That was before Lorelai.
Sienna stared into her hands.
You're that in love with her? She's everything to me.
There was a long silence before she nodded.
Okay, but it can't be now. It can't?
I whined. She shook her head.
Every ghost I've seen in October. If we're going to do anything, we'll do it on Halloween.
The wait would be unbearable, but I clenched my hands and committed to it. If this was what it took to confirm that you never died, that you were real and only a ghost to everyone but me, then so be it. I knew then that I would find you. Wait for me, Lorelai. They left one by one, the people I knew, to college or at least their careers. I watched it happen, as my parents reminded me that I should aim to do the same. I've gotten a job at a grocery store. It's hell. Customers asking me to do their bidding, a machine giving them whatever they want, the few nice people making it worse by reminding me that everyone could be like them. I learned to bag groceries. I learned that when I go even slightly slower than I could, someone in the line shouts at me. I learned to expect neither kindness nor decency. When things are slow, I think of you. And I've imagined that you might really have been a ghost. What a maneuver to arrest yourself in that time full of dreams when interpersonal emotions hold all the magic, not career aspirations. You, Lorelai, are a being of pure art and love, and I can only ever be a pretender. The nights lengthened, leaves turned to fire, pumpkins appeared in windows before I found myself checking out giant bags of candy. Now, the time has come, Lorelai. Are you ready? Sienna and I sit in that canyon, beneath Grace's house. It's not nighttime yet. Sienna says that's a misconception. We want it to be just barely dusk. The time for things in between. Now is when the spirits wake. They knew it then. She learned it again now. Above us, two neighborhoods line either side of the canyon. I imagine dozens of children walking together in costumes that they will abandon in less than a decade. My heart tremors. It is tied so much to you, Lorelai. And I can't say why.
Did you bring anything?
Sienna whispers as she sits in a crossroads of two hiking trails. I sit across from her.
I have nothing from her. I'm sorry.
Sienna frowns.
Then this will be harder. Do you have the mirror?
I pull out a hand mirror. Sienna nods and draws a circle in the ground with her finger.
From what I understand, every technique from every religion that does this is just a way to, you know, get yourself in the zone. You have to believe it, that it will work. That's the most important part.
She draws sigils in the circle that I cannot understand.
But if we're focused and it doesn't work, we can assume she's alive?
Sienna shakes her head.
No, we can assume that it didn't work. That's all.
My hands clench on my pant legs. After finishing the circle, Sienna sits down on its edge, folds her legs, and says,
Scoot closer, and then call her. Lorelai?
I say, just outside the circle. I look into the mirror. Nothing happens.
Believe,
Sienna says.
Believe that it will work.
I take a breath. I don't know about belief. But for you, I know how to feel.
Lorelai,
I call.
Please listen. I don't want to go another year without you by my side. I've never met a girl like you before. I love you. You have to believe, Eric,
Sienna says.
Believe yourself. Believe what you're saying.
There is the pulse of something, the truth. To believe myself, I must be honest. I will be honest to you, Lorelai. I will write it here. I will leave nothing out. Because here is what I said and what I thought as I looked into the mirror waiting for you. I can't go on in this world. I don't know how to grow up. I don't know what I am supposed to be. When I try to look into the future to find the adult version of myself, I see only a void. I had one moment of serenity, and that was in your arms. Lorelai, I can't let that go. I love you, yes, but even more than I love you, I can't release you. Because then what's left? As I think that, staring into the mirror, the setting sun catches the glass and something appears in it. My skin chills. I quiver.
Sienna, stop it,
I say.
What do you mean?
She whispers.
I get it. Convince me that she's dead and I'll let it go and be less annoying to everyone. That's what you want.
Sienna looks concerned.
Eric?
On the mirror is your face, Lorelai, and not a still image. Your lip curves up. You smile at me. Then a fist hits your cheek. Another follows. You're in a small, dark place, tied to a chair. Twine around your wrists, and no. Oh God, the things that happened to you, Lorelai. I cannot repeat them. You are not a runaway. We've all seen the news. When a beautiful teenage girl disappears, we know what it is. I watch it in that mirror. I watch all that happen to you. Until you are a bundle of limbs, sawed apart with a hacksaw, drenched in gasoline, then lit with a match. Only when your ashes are scattered into this canyon does the image vanish. The mirror turns back to normal.
Eric?
Sienna asks. I stand up and walk away from the circle. I imagine myself vomiting. I try to vomit. I am too empty to vomit.
You saw it, didn't you? She showed you how she died.
I am a child. A selfish and stupid child, thinking of myself when you... Oh, God.
I'm so sorry, Eric.
Flares of emotion. Rage and terror at the fact that the man was never found, that not even I saw any of his physical features with the focus so squarely on you. Grief at your death, at how you died. But confusion rises to the surface.
But I spoke to her,
I whisper to the canyon.
I've spoken to them too,
Sienna says as the sky darkens.
We spent all school year together.
I shout at her so loud that she shrinks back. There's a pause as we stare at each other. The darkness overtakes Sienna until she is just a pair of glinting eyes.
We should get out of the canyon before it gets too dark,
I say. Her body relaxes slowly. Then she stands and dusts herself off.
I hope this was enough for you, Eric. Please, let this end.
I grind my teeth. I clench my fists. I walk with her out of the canyon. I can't sleep. I stare up into the ceiling and imagine all the things I would feel if my body were your body, if I'd been where you'd been. I get up and pace around my bedroom. I throw open my door almost loud enough to wake my parents. I turn into the upstairs bathroom. After splashing water over my face, I look up into the mirror. I never want to look into a mirror again if I can help it. But here it is, right in front of me. I see everything I saw again in memory. My stomach churns. We all have only one end. And to spend it like that, Lorelai, I am so sorry.
Please,
I whisper,
allow yourself another chance.
I don't know what is beyond that barrier, what allows you to cross it, but I want to be there with you. I am begging you, here, now, please, Lorelai, reach out to me again. Touch my cheek with your hand. Yes, just like that. I see you. Get out of that chair. You can do it. This is just a memory. A place that you were once, but no longer. Attach to this world through me. We'll make an exchange. We'll meet halfway. Yes, I see you standing. Come towards me. Oh, God. Your face. No. No, I'm not afraid. I love you. Everything you represent. Touch me. Even if your arms and legs are detached, and if your face wavers and floats like that, I want to feel you. Now take me away. To the place beyond us all. Just open the door. Let me in. Please. Yes. Just like that. I love you more than life itself. Infinitely more than that time which moves life along. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of 13. This has been Lorelai. Written by Jonathan Hart. Narrated by Mason Amadeus. Stay tuned for the next story in our double feature.
There's nothing scarier than trying to find a doctor. Take it from me. Being a final girl means that once the chase is over, I need fast, reliable, in-network medical care. And that's why I use ZocDoc. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare high-quality, in-network doctors and click to instantly book an appointment. And the appointments happen fast, usually just 24 to 72 hours after booking. But you can even score same-day appointments, which is a literal lifesaver in my line of work. So what are you waiting for? Stop putting off those doctor's appointments and go to ZocDoc.com/13 to find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today.
That's ZocDoc.com/13. ZocDoc.com/THIRTEEN.
Lowe's knows you want the best for dad. This Father's Day, help him take on any project with big deals on DeWalt. Right now, get a free XR 8 amp hour battery when you buy select DeWalt tools. That's not all. Get up to two free select tools when you buy a select DeWalt 20 volt max battery kit. Maximum initial battery voltage measured without a work load is 20 volts. Nominal voltage is 18.
Welcome back. Our second story is God's Country, written by Oni S. Are you ready? Sit back, turn down the lights, and now, on with the show. I've always believed that it's rare to be given the opportunity to find a place where you truly feel at home. It is a gift to find a sense of belonging when you've never truly known a safe harbor upon which to rest your head. Most people can make do with something less than what they truly want. Most people can tamp down the wanting that works its way out over the years, like a deeply embedded splinter. Most people can be happy with that. But I am not like most people. Much like the fabled princess and the pea, each little discomfort wedges its way into my core, and I cannot rest until I have things just so. There is no rest for my mind until the heart that thrums in my chest matches the beat of my bedfellow and the timbre of the land that lies beneath me. I've been lucky, for I've been blessed to know all of this and more. And for that, I will be forever grateful. Before I get too far into things, I feel as though I ought to make something abundantly clear. This, if you haven't already guessed, is a love story. Or, perhaps, it is a story about love. And how far one is willing to go to grasp it, if only for a time. All my life, I've always felt like I was running on a different frequency than the rest of the people in my hometown. It was as if the city of Willow Glen itself shifted a few inches to the left every so often without warning, leaving me with bruised knees and a raw heart. I was forever off by just enough, running at a different pace than the town around me. From my first foray into kindergarten, the other children picked up on this fact, and in turn, they picked on me. All in all, I wasn't bullied much. At least, not in the traditional way you might imagine when one says the word bully. More often, I was ignored and outcast. I was that weird kid who was smart enough not to get into trouble or make the teachers concerned, but whose offers of friendship were treated with mild disinterest and shrugged shoulders by my peers. I grew much like a tree that is sprouted in the desert, taking any small nourishment where I could, and making do with less than I needed. And I was a creature of need. My feelings were too large for the small life I'd been granted. But I still spent ages trying to shrink myself down into the space I was given. It never worked well for long. The only reprieve from this aching need were the yearly summer trips my parents would drag me along on, as I was an only child. We never really went anywhere fancy, other than the one year we went to a semi-famous place on a lake that boasted a permanent carnival affixed to one of its piers. But in my junior year of high school, I was given the opportunity to go along with the school band to a week-long music festival in the woods, around a five-hour drive north in a stuffy bus. Little could I have dreamed that I was about to visit the place that would take my heart, a place called Hallaton. I had known only discord for years, so it was surprising when we hit the mountains and the air changed in a way that did more than make me yawn and pop my ears. Something that had constantly been spinning and winding up my anxiety fell quiet for the first time. It was as though the world had gone silent, and I could finally breathe. At first, I told myself it was simply the distance from my fighting parents, each with their petty refusal to be the first to initiate divorce proceedings, out of some misplaced idea that I enjoyed living with two unhappy adults looking at me like I was a prison sentence. But it was more than that. The water tasted better, even when sipped lukewarm from an archaic park drinking fountain. The air wasn't just cold and clean, but it filled me with a sparkling anticipation for something that I couldn't name. On the third night of the trip, I waited until my roommates had fallen asleep in our shared retro roadside motel room. And then, I simply walked out into the darkness of the woods, with only the screen on my flip phone to light the way. Of course, anyone who knows anything about the woods would say that that was stupid of me to do. And I knew that, logically. But the moon was nearly full, and the pine trees were just far enough apart to let in enough light to see by as my eyes adjusted. I didn't go far, and the gravel trail was wide and straight enough that I felt no sense of fear as I walked. Finally, I came to a small meadow. There, I allowed the grasses to tickle and slide against my legs as I walked out into the center of it. All of my usual worries about spiders or ticks were completely absent. I reached out with my free hand to run my palm against the tops of the whispering weeds. In the center of the meadow was a mound of bare earth. I climbed on top of it, savoring the slight lift upward. Even as the soil gave slightly under my shoes, I breathed in the cool, yet somehow spiced night air and closed my eyes, allowing myself to stand perfectly still before staring up at the night sky above me. The bright moon dampened the light from the stars, and there was an ambient glow from the town. But I felt, in that moment, like I could see further than I ever had before. There was a sense that I had been led there somehow. And despite being notoriously clumsy, I hadn't so much as caught my shoe on a stray gopher hole or rolled my ankle on an errant rock. Much later, I would learn that mountain lions and coyotes were known to roam the area at night. But but I was spared an encounter with either. It was as though the forest had been cleared of any obstacle to lead me to stand in that spot and tilt my face to the sky in wonder. But I didn't feel quite alone. As I stood there, the bottoms of my feet grew unusually warm through the soles of my shoes. And when I knelt down to touch the mound of dirt, for a moment, it seemed to swell under my touch, like the deep inhale of a massive creature. When I raised my hand to my face, a strange yet familiar odor filled my nostrils, and I felt the irrational urge to drop to the ground and run my tongue against it. I shuddered. The thought hadn't come from me, or at least I didn't think it had. But in that moment, in the darkness, it felt like I had come untethered from everything except the places where my body touched the ground. This is all that's keeping you from spinning off into space, I thought. And suddenly, I realized that my hands were hungrily clawing the dirt without any conscious effort on my part. It was only then that I noticed that the moon had set, and all that flickered above me were the stars and the distant light of town. My flip phone was hanging from the lanyard around my neck, its light swinging wildly in front of me. It must have flipped open somehow, and the sudden glow had brought me back to myself. I shook my head, disoriented. How long had I been doing this? Gritty dirt caked around my lips, and I coughed, expelling a clump of wet, spicy soil that had been in my mouth. Running my dirty hands across my body, I surveyed the damage as best I could. My whole body seemed to be covered in a layer of grime, as though I'd bathed in the dirt. And maybe it was the sleep deprivation, but my skin felt prickly, as though an imperceptible hum were filling the air. I remember feeling a tugging sensation, as though I was more firmly pulled against the ground itself. A caress of earth in my hair, a whisper beyond words telling me that I needed to... I can't exactly explain what happened next. Only that when I found myself opening my eyes, I was standing only a few paces from the hotel room. Something felt different. I checked my body in the sickly yellow hallway lights. But it seemed that I didn't have a speck of dirt on my clothing or skin. My whole body ached as though I had been running, and my mind was full of sleep. Rather than being horrified at my spotty memories from my foray into the dark woods, I instead felt oddly protected. Something had touched me deeper than any physical caress. It had claimed me, had wanted me. And all I had to do was something. I couldn't remember. It wasn't a dream, was it? I thought to myself. I quickly collapsed into the rollout bed and slept so deeply that I can't remember dreaming at all. It was only the next day when I opened my flip phone that I would discover the dirt encrusted around the buttons. And just like that, I knew I'd found my home. As soon as I could, I made plans. And I left my hometown behind. If you knew me, you would probably laugh at how predictable I was, choosing Hallaton for its ready access to nature, a place known for its slow pace of life. It wasn't a glittering concrete jungle, The kind that my peers talked about moving to and cultivating a glamorous adult lifestyle. But there has always been an energy here, and it called to me in a silent language that I could feel on my skin, long before it claimed me for its own. Maybe it's the snaking belly of the river that winds its way through town and whispers. Maybe it's the trees stretching to the sky, their branches murmuring in time with the wind. Whatever it is, being in this place grounded me more than anything else I'd ever experienced in my life. After so long in a bitter town that only held on to me out of filial responsibility, I simply had to be in a place that loved me. The moment that I reached the Hallaton city limits in my dented Acura, the windows down to let in that spicy scented air, a weight lifted off of my shoulders. I was home. Sure, it wasn't perfect. Finding a room to rent had been an exercise in frustration. The number of rooms for rent that didn't reek of some kind of smoked substance or other was disturbingly low. Then there were the rooms rented out by little old ladies with buttons all the way to their chins and a list of rules that stretched to the floor. In the end, I went with a slightly larger than a closet-sized room, rented by a kind woman who taught preschool. I had mentioned that I was planning on studying education, as my father had taught high school for many years, and that seemed to seal the deal. Her name was Eleanor, and she seemed to live in yoga pants and loose-fitting thrift store t-shirts. With that, I felt another missing piece slide into place as I found my footing in my new home. My home. The word finally seemed to be imbued with the meaning I'd always craved. God's country, you said when I mentioned how this place drew me in. You've never been religious, and you never specified what God, but I often imagine the whole stretch of land like a great sleeping serpent upon which we live our lives, never knowing when our love might be tested by the need to sacrifice or to prove our devotion. I was slightly surprised to find that there was a bit of a regular nightlife, even outside of the school year. Honestly, it's funny to think that we probably went to some of the same shows and campus events, but we never actually met until a few months later. It was kind of hilarious, actually, because you sat next to me in one of those big auditorium classes on the second day of our freshman year. And I immediately sized up your big black jacket, black-tipped, shaggy auburn hair, your painted black fingernails, and your Doc Martens. And I thought, this guy looks like he's trying to be scary, but his eyes are like mine. Then, I choked and couldn't get the courage to ask your name. I nearly jumped out of my seat when I felt your finger gently tap me on the shoulder. I'm pretty sure I squeaked, and my whole face heated with embarrassment. I don't know if you remember this, but you told me later that the only thing that overrode your anxiety over talking to me was the fact that you'd completely forgotten your pen and notebook in your haste to get to class. Luckily, I had both. Thanks, you mumbled as I handed over the aforementioned note-taking supplies. It's Lucy, I said. You told me your name was Derek, and you held my gaze for a long moment. Everything felt fuzzy, but also clearer than usual. There was something about you that called to me, even then. We held each other's gaze for a long time, but it was me who looked away first. Nice to meet you, I said, fighting the urge to chew on my pen. It was a nervous habit, only slightly less embarrassing than my habit of chewing my nails down to the quick. Lucy, you said, your voice husky and deep, like my name was a prayer. Even now, all these years later, the shuffling chatter of that dusty room and the familiar burn of the hangnail on my left index finger still comes to mind when I think back to that first time we sat side by side. And you saw me in a way that I'd always dreamed of being seen. There wasn't much time for additional chit-chat as the lecturer and his TAs filed in to start class only a few moments later. And I remember how you let out a shocked expletive when it turned out you'd mixed up your classes. Still, you stayed the whole time, our legs brushing from time to time in the cramped and overcrowded auditorium. In the hustle and bustle of the rush to my next class, I realized that I'd forgotten to ask for my pen back. But I was more crushed by the fact that you probably thought I was ditching you at the rate I had to run from the room. But the thing was, my next class was nearly halfway across campus, and I'd have to be lucky if I was going to catch a shuttle. I expected you not to come again, but you did. And even after we exchanged phone numbers, that was my first and best impression of you. Every time I expected to be abandoned or ignored, as I always had been, there you were, showing up just for me. And I know I shouldn't bore you with all of these details. I've told you this so many times before, if only to see your eyes shift towards mine, to see in your face the recognition of how much we mean to one another as the years pass us by. This is first and foremost a story of love. And sometimes love takes time. Sometimes it hurts in the best, most simple ways to remind you that despite all that has happened, you're still here. It was inevitable that we would become friends, feeling out our shared and disparate interests. You introduced me to industrial metal and Cuban food. I introduced you to horror anime and urban adventuring. Okay, maybe I'm just trying to make it sound interesting, but I've long been a fan of simple roaming about without a fixed goal in mind, sometimes on a bike or rollerblades, but more often on foot, detaching from the frenzied pace of focused tasks and deadlines and just seeing what's out there. You weren't like me. You were born here. You'd been raised on the water and food grown in this place. All your life, you would swim in its streams and roll in its dirt and come out on the other side as bound to it as it was to you. We would walk the streets back from campus after dark. Sometimes we would stray into silent parks, the trees standing watch over playgrounds and pathways. There was, as always, a fresh, spicy scent in the air as we moved together, side by side. Sometimes we would talk as though we were the only two people in the world, with only the earth beneath us listening. Other times, we walked in silence, our ears and eyes primed to take in the world of shadows and streetlights around us. A few times, we went to dark places when the moon was barely a crescent in the sky, simply to feel something that neither of us could name. It was like being swallowed and blanketed by a weight that was exhilarating and terrifying at once. But we knew, even then, that we were never alone. In the dark, you can hear so much that is hidden by the sights and sounds of the daylight hours. There is the breath of the land and all that lives within it that hums at the edges of your perception. It helps you realize just how small you truly are, but how important you are in your insignificance. Later, We would go back to your room and drink tea and eat inadvisable snack foods until we passed out. This happened enough that I started leaving my clothes at your room, and vice versa. It felt so natural to curl up against you, to feel you warm and solid at my back. It became inevitable that our lips and hands would meet, that we would shred any vestiges of our usual armor and slide skin to skin into one another. You would gasp my name, and it was a beautiful thing on your lips. I was so used to hearing it spat like an expletive, I would sometimes forget you were talking about me. But then I would be drawn into your gaze as you wrapped yourself around me, fingers and lips, and the slow, steady press of your hips, proving your feelings. It sounds cliche to speak of souls, but what else can it be when you feel the threads that lie silent at your core suddenly cry out in bliss? Sure, the sex was good. And I mean it when I say that I am deeply grateful for our shared inexperience. It allowed us to grow together as we learned. But it was more than that. It was knowing that I was in a place that wanted me, with a person who wanted me. And I had never before felt so solid in the world. I cannot deny how much I flourished under these new conditions. And in so many ways, that made what happened later harder to accept. But I'm getting ahead of myself, and there's no need. The story is nearly told. Our lives entwined as though the land beneath us nurtured our relationship to fruition. One summer, we eloped, because it was easier. 2 years later, we bought a two-bedroom cabin on a hill overlooking the river. Already, I was carrying our twins, but neither of us knew at the time. It's all so fuzzy now in hindsight, but I'm sure I teased you about all of the fruitless, dirty, sexy, steamy sex we'd had to practice before I became pregnant. And I'm sure I got you to laugh at least a few times. And by then, you weren't instinctively cupping your smiles in your palm out of fear of ridicule for your crooked bottom teeth. Becoming parents changed us in many ways, but in others, we just became more of ourselves. Our focus changed, but we were always drawn back to one another like magnets. Exhausted magnets, to be sure. Twins were no joke. But we were a seamless team, even as the sleep deprivation and stress stole the years from us. One day, they were old enough to fix themselves cereal and watch cartoons. Then they were grown up and away from us in what seemed like no time at all. That's how I feel now. No time. Never enough time. Even now, I wish for those bittersweet days with you by my side. They said something burst in your brain. That you didn't feel anything. But they didn't see you fall with that choked noise that could have been gibberish. But I knew that sound. Even as your brain lost its regular, tightly humming rhythm and spun out towards oblivion. Lucy, you were trying to say. My name frozen on your lips as you flung your hand out, grasping for me to hold you here, to keep you from dissolving. I took your hand
even as I felt the life unspooling from your body. My mind went blank with panic as I grasped for any way to save you from your traitorous body. God's country, whispered a small voice in my mind. I pushed it away, my fingers pressing the emergency call button on my phone. My body was floating as I was untethered for the first time in years. No, 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 I moaned. It didn't sound like me. I didn't even know I was saying it. I smoothed your hair back from your head. Your eyes were closed. It looked like you were sleeping on the floor next to the stairs. Ask, the voice whispered. I couldn't. A void yawned within me. There was no time for sorrow. This land had loved me, had given me a place to grow and thrive. After all this time, it wasn't enough. I needed you. What do you desire? The words were not words, but I could understand them perfectly. They hummed around us as my howling split the night air. I still need you. Holding you and rocking you as I refused to believe that this was the end of everything. I let myself ask for something impossible. Give him back. My growl was feral, animalistic. Are you sure? The words beyond words were like cricket songs from far away. I knew instinctively that it was wrong. I need him, I choked out. I knew there would be consequences that I couldn't control. There is a price. I didn't care. Please. There was nothing else I could bring myself to say. Something shifted within me then. Something that wasn't me took hold of my need for you. I could feel the size and the weight of the earth, the water, and the things wriggling deep into the mantle where nothing needs eyes. I could feel the metallic bubbling of heated magma licking against my consciousness. It was something my mind wasn't meant to know. But I held on. Such was my need. I have always been full of need, after all. Great stores of it have filled me all the days of my life. And in the end, I gave it all for you. And so, it was in this way that I pulled back the part of you that had been untethered from your traitorous body. The part of you that looks at me the way you do now. But I couldn't reconnect you with your body. It was too damaged to hold you. Now, I can still touch you, and you seem to feel it. I know that everyone thinks I'm grieving,
They think it's wishful thinking when I speak of you, spooning me until my spine lights up with the press of your soul, of drawing you into me until I am sated, despite your inconsistent incorporeality. As the weeks go on, though, I've noticed changes that cannot be ignored. Sometimes, your form seems to shift abruptly, and I see a version of you that has withered into something bordering on frightening. Clawed digits extend from your spectral sleeves, accompanied by dark spots of spiritual rot eating away at you. Sometimes, you open your silent mouth, and I see far too many teeth. Once, I was awoken by the echo of a wail of anguish that pulled my heart into my throat and stole all the thoughts of sleep away. This can't go on much longer. I love you too much to let you rot because of my selfishness. And so, this is why, even though you forget yourself and your eyes are growing unfocused again, I needed to tell you the story of our love and of the land that loves us both enough to bring you back, if only to ease an old woman's grief. Let me wrap my arms around you, love. There is only one way that this ends. The God of Hallaton has been good to us both. Its blessing has given us respite, and our roots here have grown deep. I love you, and I always will. I am blessed to be bound to this place that loves us. I see your eyes focus as I tell you this tale. And, just like before, something far beyond my comprehension sighs and smiles inside of me, granting my last request to make things right. Can you feel the resonance inside of my chest? Now, come to me and nestle snugly into the chambers of my heart. Come home to live where you are loved, and together, we will go back to the land that we cherish. There is no greater gift than that. Thank you for joining us for this episode of 13. If you like what you heard, stop what you're doing and leave a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. This has been a double feature. Lorelei was written by Jonathan Hart and narrated by Mason Amadeus. God's Country was written by Oni S. and narrated by Brooke Jeanette. Editing and sound design by Brooke Jeanette. Additional assistance from Ian Epperson and Bridget Freeman. Our producer-level patrons are Tattooed Fox, Rhiannon, Sean Geary, Anthony Diaz, Amy Harper, Jackie K, Chantel Payne, Nick, Jake R, and Kozamine. Thank you guys so much for your support. Click the link in the show notes to learn more about joining us on Patreon. And check us out on social media. You can find us most places under Pod 13. And you can join the Facebook group for 13 Podcast. Just look for the logo, and you'll find links in the show notes. If you'd like to submit a story to be performed on the show, or if you'd like to contact us about anything else, You can get in touch at info@13podcast.com. You'll find submission guidelines and other info on our website, 13podcast.com. You can find that in the show notes too. Bridget Freeman is haunting your daydreams. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon. This has been Lorelei, written by Jonathan Hart, narrated by Mason Amadeus.
What? I haven't narrated anything in a long time.
This is Lorelei.
Oh, shit. That's
it's like the first one you did.
Oh, okay.
Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Save $100 on the Craftsman V20 6-Tool Power Tool Combo Kit, now at $199. No matter what the project is, Craftsman's high-quality, high-performance products empower you to build on. Stop by your nearest Lowe's store and check out the full line of Craftsman tools today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.